Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/atheistnomads. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's audibletrial.com/atheistnomads. We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. This is episode 33. Thank God for an act of God with Rebecca Fitzman. And she'll be joining us a little bit later in the show in the interview section. I am Dustin, and joining me as always is Wesley.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Unemployment is awesome.
It is kind of nice to lounge around for a little while.
Yeah. No, not the unemployment benefits here. The Idaho has really shitty levels for that. So, yeah, that's not the good part. But having a couple of weeks off has been quite nice. Getting to see some family. And I've been to 3 national parks and 1 national monument in just over a week.
Nice, man.
Yeah, yeah. Crater Lake, Craters of the Moon, Yellowstone, and Grand Teton.
Craters of the Moon, really?
Mm-hmm.
Is that around Crater Lake?
No. That is about halfway between Boise and Idaho Falls, just above I-84. So it's out in central Idaho, pretty close to the Idaho National Laboratory.
Okay.
INL is, they're the ones that built the engine for Curiosity.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Craters of the Moon is also near Arco, which was the first city in the U.S. entirely powered with nuclear power.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
And they probably did that just so they could have the power plant way the fuck away from mostly largely populated areas.
Yes, that was one of the main spots for doing those early tests there in Los Alamos. They did some testing at Hanford, but Hanford is mostly just producing nuclear weapons.
And storage.
Yeah.
For trash.
Yeah. Yeah. It became that because that's where so much of that production was going on. So they couldn't transport it, really, so they just left it there.
Well. Also, my shipyard, Burlington, in Burlington, Puget Sound Naval Shipyard, we're the only shipyard that's allowed to cut up boats, nuclear boats.
Mm-hmm.
So when those reactors get decommissioned and all sealed up, we actually boat them down to Hanford.
And I wouldn't be surprised if the reason for that is so that it doesn't have to cross state lines. Once you start crossing state lines, then people start coming unglued.
Yeah, yeah. True.
There was a reservation in Nevada that was offering to take some nuclear waste.
Mm.
They were going to get lots of money for it. State of Nevada said, hell no. They didn't want that crossing into their state. And so that deal didn't happen, and the waste just has been staying at Hanford.
Well, yeah. Remember those three-headed fish that they have on The Simpsons? That shit's real.
Oh, yeah. Well, heck, there was one of those in Idaho not too long ago, thanks to selenium release from Simplot, dumping radioactive isotopes into the water from their fertilizer manufacturing.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. You can, if you want to find out more about that, take a look at the Daily Show archives. Sometime last summer, they talked about that. Did an interesting little piece there.
Nice. Yes.
Yeah. Got a couple of the details off, but it's a lot closer to the truth than you might believe.
That's always fucked up.
It is quite the fucked up situation with that. But that's getting kind of off topic. Let's go ahead and move on to some of the reminders we have.
Yeah. Talking about Light the Night.
Yes. Light the Night is coming up in October around the country. And just as a reminder, once again, Todd Stiefel is giving a 1-to-1 match for all donations received up to $250,000. Last year, I think the grand total with his match came up to about $460,000.
Hot damn.
And this year, they're wanting to beat that. And I say, hell yeah. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does awesome, awesome work. They raise money for research on blood cancers. And They also provide a lot of really good services, like getting patients in touch with survivors so that they can have that hope that they can get through it. And so they're both helping people get through it and helping make sure that future people that get it have a better chance of survival. So it's a great organization, well worth support. And if you have a team in your area, join up with the Foundation Beyond Belief team. If you don't have a team in your area or any event in your area, feel free to go to the Treasure Valley Coalition of Reason Foundation Beyond Belief team, which I am the captain of, and donate under me.
Yeah, I noticed that in your link there. It's not just the generic donate to the Light the Night. It's the Treasure Valley. I caught that.
Yes, and I am not ashamed to be doing that. And of course, always, Foundation Beyond Belief does do good work, and this is probably as good a time as any to plug in that commercial.
Foundation Beyond Belief is a community of compassionate humanists and atheists supporting outstanding charities worldwide. Members sign up for automatic donations starting at $5 a month, then distribute those funds however they wish among the featured charities. To date, this unique humanist organization has raised over $750,000 to make this world a better, more humane place. We don't look to the skies for a better world. Foundation Beyond Belief is humanity at work. Learn more or join us at foundationbeyondbelief.org.
All right, moving on to feedback. I'm not really going to read any of the feedback that we've gotten. There was one letter from some crazy-ass douchebag that I think just copied some essay he wrote and emailed it to us, and it was completely insane.
Oh, it was cute.
Yeah. Insane. And beyond that, it definitely did get some very kind messages from people offering sympathy for me losing my job. But let me assure you, it was for the best.
So we got some supporters going on here.
Yes, we do. With those
freaking platinums.
Yeah. With those new levels that were created, we now have 3 platinum sponsors. Robert Ray from the Humanists of the North Puget Sound.
And I got to say, Robert Ray is the owner of some of the best bow ties around. Dude's awesome.
Yes, he is. He is. We also got Virginia Dawn.
Yay!
You can find her on Twitter. And Russ from the Kitsap Atheists and Agnostics.
That's my boy. He cooks a great steak.
We also got a gold sponsor who goes by Vernware.
Interesting.
Yes. And Gary also made a donation.
Gary! Vern, where? What's up?
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. It is, I think, pretty sure that at this point, as long as this level of support continues, or, well, even better, would go up, the show will go on. And the messages I got from, in correspondence with the sponsors is really just, they just want to make sure that the show continues. And thank you, thank you.
Hell yeah. A few bucks, a mocha a month goes a hell of a long way.
Yeah. Literally from the bottom of my heart, thank you.
Yeah. Homeboy's been swinging all the money for this. I just show up on the day and get people to talk with us.
Yeah.
But Dustin's been footing the bill, so appreciate it, guys.
Definitely. Footing the bill and doing the editing. The cool thing is I have time for the editing now.
Come on, editing. Come on. What is that, like 20 minutes, 30 minutes? I mean, we got the shit like bam, 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 don't we?
6-7 hours.
Oh, come on. Come on. All right.
All the editing and post-production, yeah, it takes about 6-7 hours per episode.
Fucking bloody hell. This day in history, August 22nd, 1864, the International Red Cross is founded. So, Geneva Convention of 1864, they wanted to make a group of doctors and medics that could go out and basically help others during war and not get their ass shot off. Seems like a fairly straightforward idea, and it was pretty damn cool. There was a Swiss humanitarian named Jean-Henri Durant. Something like that. Giving it a French sounding for a Swiss name, but fuck it. Yeah, he called for a nonpartisan care for the sick and wounded in times of war, provided that there is neutrality for medical personnel. They actually gave him a freaking the first Nobel Peace Prize for this in 1901. They chose the Swiss flag in reverse, so that is a red cross on a white background, as kind of like a thank you or another tribute to him.
Mm-hmm.
In 1881, the Americans formed their own group under Clara Barton and Adolphus Solomons, which you might be familiar with her. But yeah, kind of pretty fucking cool, you know, and it only took us what, like, almost 20 years to catch up, but whatevs. Hey, pretty cool group. Not that they're wearing a target on their back or anything. All right. Moving on along. This day in history, in 1920, a pretty damn cool American was born. Ray Bradbury, a writer of a lot of fantasy, social commentaries, science fiction, and horror novels. Actually, mystery, too, supposedly. You might know him for Fahrenheit 451, and if you don't, you need to fucking read that or see it. Both were awesome. And if you're really a big fucking geek, you probably know about the Martian Chronicles. But this guy, you know, just a everyday kind of guy. Pretty cool, decent guy. He was born in Waukegan, Illinois, and lived to 91 years. Fucking A. He just died, under a year, about a year ago in 2012. But, yeah, sad to see him go. Awesome shit. Need to look him up. And let's see, this day in history, August 22nd, 1921, that is the day that J. Edgar Hoover became the assistant chief in the FBI. You might have heard that little group of wasps. Yeah. You know, it only took him like about 3 years until he was actually appointed director of the FBI. A position that he actually held until 1972 when he died. Fuck a duck.
Mm.
Yeah, this dude knew everybody's dirty secrets and was proud of it. He served under every president from Calvin Coolidge to Richard fucking Nixon. And there's quite a few of those guys that actually tried to get him kicked out or probably thrown in jail. But with all the dirt that J. Edgar had, he pretty much sealed it. You know, he wasn't getting thrown anywhere. But, good or bad, he kind of cleared out the FBI and kind of turned it into his own personal army. But, you know, I'm not going to really get into that. Man, that's the guy that had the dirt on everybody. Anyways, moving on along. This day in history, 1989, Nolan Ryan gets his 5,000th strikeout. So, I don't know if you're into baseball, but...
Nope.
Yeah, me either, but I kind of remember this. He actually got his 5,000th strikeout in a game they lost against Ricky Henderson in the top of the fifth inning. Yeah, kind of interesting stuff. I mean, he's the strikeout king, so far as I know, still the top of the game there. Nolan would go on to rack up a total of 5,714 strikeouts. That's over 1,500 more than his closest competition. You know what? That is kind of still pretty fucking cool. But supposedly he's even more famous for his record 7 no-hitters, the last of which came in 1991 when he was fucking 44 years old. Goddamn. It's quite the athlete or ball tosser there. And on a slightly darker note, this day in history, 1992, the incident at Ruby Ridge. You might have heard of a particular gun nutter or nice person, depending on who you ask, called Randy Weaver. Yeah. He got in trouble for selling a couple sawed-off shotguns to an ATF informant, and... well, that got him under surveillance and a whole bunch of shit, and people at the ATF and later a whole bunch of other people, the FBI sharpshooters, everybody just like kind of mobbing around his house and Just a whole bunch of shit went down. There was one quite the story. For a long time. Yeah. How long did this last? It was like a couple of weeks, wasn't it?
It was a decent standoff, as I recall. Granted, I was 8 when it was happening, but...
Yeah, man. I mean, FBI sharpshooter actually killed his kid when the boy was out for walking around the property with their pet dog. And then, you know, it seemed like they were trying to bring the kid's body back for burial. And, you know, the sharpshooter, Lon Hirucci, actually went and did some more shooting because he said that he thought they were armed when they were trying to get the kid. Man. Yeah, they surrendered like 9 days later. Fuck a duck. Anyways, apparently the government didn't think too much of this case, and it turns out that in 1993, Weaver was acquitted in a federal court on murder, conspiracy, and other charges related to Deegan's death, which was one of the guys that Weaver killed during the standoff. But
yeah, one of the marshals.
Man, he still got convicted of failing to appear in the trial for that firearms charge. But, man, in 1995, basically the government settled this whole thing and ended up giving Weaver $3.1 million. So, goddamn, this is just a mess from start to finish.
Uh-huh.
Fuck, even Idaho tried to sue the FBI sharpshooter.
No, it wasn't just a lawsuit. Criminal charges. Involuntary manslaughter.
Fuck. Federal court threw that out, saying that they couldn't charge a fed with state criminal offenses. But, man, this is just fucked.
Hmm. Yeah, it was a pretty wild, crazy situation. almost literally, they threw a match on a powder keg.
But I think the only one worse that I could think of is Waco.
Mm-hmm. And really close in time frame, too. The ATF really got themselves some higher scrutiny after all that.
Yeah.
Waco siege was 93.
Okay. So that was like a year later.
Yeah.
Fuck. Not a good time to be an ATF, if there was ever a good time.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on along.
It's time for science and technology.
Hey.
This first one comes to us via Russ. Some new research into brain activity was looking at why is it that people who nearly die or who do die but are then resuscitated, why they always talk about seeing a bright shining light. And what they found, this is a study looking at mice and watching brain scans on them, is that the brain keeps working for about 30 seconds after blood flow stops. And so...
That activity actually kicks up quite a bit.
Yes. In that 30 seconds, there's a huge surge of brain activity. This was observed through EEGs and found very, well, according to this article, highly aroused mental states. And they were actually pretty surprised by the levels of activity. And so all of these, the electrical signatures found with consciousness actually went beyond that of what is normally found in a waking state, which suggests that when somebody is in an early stage of death, that they're capable of some really well-organized activity.
And like sleep, you can't measure time in a dream or like a non-waking time very well. So you could think that you're in whatever place you are for, you know, seconds, minutes, hours, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
especially when it's just this huge rush, massive wave of activity.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be, you could easily process as much information as you do.
Like, no, I was talking to grandma for like a half hour at least. Fuck you. Sorry.
Yeah, so it's, you know, like everything else, when there is something that seems to be lacking a natural explanation, science has a way of finding those natural explanations.
Fucking A. And that was like, what, 20% of the rats? It's a pretty damn large percentage there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Moving on. We talked a few episodes back, I think it was episode 28, about Kepler breaking down. That was back in May. And NASA's been working for quite a while on trying to fix it. And those efforts have all failed, and they've now announced that Kepler is dead.
Poor little guy.
Yeah.
Had a good run, though. They still have a lot of data to go over, though.
Well, again, it could still be used for something else, but it's not going to be able to look for exoplanets.
It doesn't have that fine-grained ability to track like it used to.
Yeah. So far, they've already found 3,548 possible planets.
Fuck.
And about 135 of them have actually been validated by other observations. Some of them are even smaller than Earth. This, you know, there was the expectation that there would be planets around other worlds, and Kepler was sent up there to try to test that hypothesis. And it has done a damn good job. And with the amount of data that has been collected from Kepler, they'll be pouring through that for years.
Yep, yep, yep.
There is a new radar system in the works in Canada called the Large Animal Detection System. And so what it does is it sends out a 360-degree radar signal every second. And it monitors the reflections to find out what animals are there. And using the software, it tries to identify what are small animals, what are large animals, what's vegetation, and what are automobiles. And it's only trying to track the large animals and cars. And this has actually been doing a pilot project over the last year on a highway in Ontario, Canada. And it has a radius of about 700 meters. It works even in harsh weather, like heavy snow. And they use it to to flash lights on street signs to alert drivers if there's a large animal around.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Of course, it's also used to try to capture data on how many vehicles are on the road and how fast they're driving, all things you can do with radar. But the big goal of this is to try to cut down how many people are being killed by collisions with large animals, in particular, moose.
My dad hit a full-size horse in a 72 or 73 Dodge pickup truck.
Ooh.
Totaled the truck. So, yeah, that shit. Those animals don't joke.
No, and especially the moose. The moose is the most dangerous animal in North America, responsible for more human deaths than anything else. A lot of those are from traffic collisions, because you hit something that massive and, yeah, you're toast.
It's a fucking brick wall.
Yeah. Alrighty. In some recent excavations in southeast Turkey, have found 49 very sculpted figurines that, upon examination, appear to be pieces that were probably used in a game, possibly even a board game.
I'm bored already.
5,000 years old. yeah, finding figurines in bronze and even Iron Age sites is very common. But most of those are fertility figurines, and they are, well, very obvious because of the types of features on them. In particular, like the ones I found in Jordan, those fertility figurines were all images of pregnant women, similar to the Venus Milo?
I thought that was a statue, a big one.
That one's a big statue, yeah. But there's small figurines as well. And those are very common throughout the region. But little pieces like this, and if you follow the link to the article, you'll see some pictures. They are duplicates, and they were all found together in one tomb. And so definitely looks like some kind of a board game. Heck, maybe the first ever game of chess.
Kind of cool.
Although, okay, the first actual forms of chess weren't until about 1500 years ago. But still, that's pretty cool to think that they had board games back in the Bronze Age.
Hmm. Now, if they played Cards Against Humanity,
Oh, man, that would look so different back then. Some Dutch scientists have been trying to find a use for carbon emissions from power plants. And the system they're working on, and so far it's a concept. They've done a little bit of experimentation with it, but it'd still take a hell of a lot of work to actually put it into application at a coal, oil, or natural gas plant. But what they do, or what the idea is you take carbon dioxide from the smokestacks, and you pump it into water or some kind of other liquid. As that carbon dioxide mixes with the water, and you're going to have to increase the pressure quite a bit to do this, it will produce carbonic acid. And in the process of creating carbonic acid, it releases a lot of ions. Yes, releases a lot of ions that will interact with the electrodes and give off electricity. If they used all of the waste gas from power generation and home and commercial heating, this could be enough to produce 1,750 terawatt hours of electricity per year, which works out to about 400 times the output of Hoover Dam.
Hmm.
And this would all be done without putting any extra greenhouse gases in the atmosphere.
Well, that could sure help with, like, emerging markets and all the extra people we need to take care of in the world, I suppose.
Or, heck, in places where, you know, the developed world, where you've got coal plants that are just putting out an awful lot of pollution, if you increase the efficiency of the plants that you have, you can maybe take some of those offline.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty slick.
Cool.
All right.
Google is about to start testing Project Loon in California's Central Valley. This is actually kind of cool. They float up actually like hot air balloons or helium filled balloons and have like big ass wireless repeaters on top of them that kind of form a network that you could connect to and get internet. And their plan is to do this in places that it's not practical to have a lot of internet, not a lot of power lines or, you know, wires through neighborhoods or trees and jungles and shit.
And so, for those of you listening at home, Wesley has had his arms in the air waving the entire time.
Shit. Yeah, because video's on. God damn it.
It was quite entertaining to watch. I'm really sorry we're not doing this one on video. Well, at least hang out on air.
All right. So, yeah. Anyways, Project Loon, look it up.
For you, the listeners of Atheist Nomads, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You might want to check out The End of Faith by Sam Harris. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/atheistnomads. Again, that's audibletrial.com/atheistnomads for your free audiobook. Moving on to politics and religion. Egypt. I think I kept putting in the show notes and we kept missing it each time. Egypt has turned into this crazy, crazy mess. You know, if you've been living under a rock, then you've probably missed out on all of this. But everybody else, I'm sure, is getting tired of hearing the news about Egypt. The you know, they had that uprising in 2011. The military threw out Mubarak, and then they had a election, and the election ended up resulting in the Muslim Brotherhood winning, a Islamicist party, and they pushed through a very Islamicist constitution, and Egypt had been a secular nation under Mubarak's dictatorship, and that was going to be heading in the wrong direction in the eyes of many of the people in Egypt. The uprising to get rid of Mubarak was largely young, secularly minded students, and Egypt's a country with a very large, at least for that part of the world, religious minority. About 10% of Egypt's population is Christian. And they've definitely run into some issues with some violence against the Coptic Church there in recent times. And so after protests against Mursi, the popularly elected president, the military stepped in again and removed him from power, and he's been arrested, and now they're cracking down on more and more leaders within the Muslim Brotherhood. Obviously, after the democratically elected president was removed from power, his backers went out and protested. And some of those protests ended up getting a little bit violent. And at this point, about 900 people have died, 100 police and soldiers included.
God damn. I didn't know it was that bad.
Yeah. It's turning into a pretty messy situation. This has caused the U.S., EU, and a number of other countries to get a little uncomfortable with the situation. You know, in particular, the military throwing out Egypt's first ever democratically elected president. And what's interesting here is Israel, along with some Gulf Arab nations like Saudi Arabia, are pushing the West to not punish Cairo's new military leadership. Seems
odd.
Interesting that you'd have the Saudis, who are very Islamicist, pushing for us to not punish Egypt's military for throwing out an Islamicist. All around, it is a crazy, crazy situation. And one thing I hate to say is I saw this coming. Not necessarily this exact situation, but with the time I spent in the Middle East, granted, it was 6 weeks on an archaeological dig, I don't think that region is ready for democracy.
That sure as hell not stable.
You need stability for democracy, but the other big factor is you need to have a nation first, and not tribal societies. Tribal societies need kings and dictators. At the point that you actually have a nation, you might have a chance of being able to have a successful democracy. And I'm just not seeing that as being too terribly likely here. So it will be interesting to see what happens here. It definitely would be nice to see Egypt be able to be a beacon for secular democracy in the Arab world. It is the most populous Arab state, and so that would be absolutely incredible, but the likelihood of that happening is very slim. Very slim.
Well, moving on.
Yep. The world's oldest temple has been under excavation since the mid-90s. The site is about 11,000 years old, and it includes at least 20 circular enclosures. As they've dug more and more, what they are beginning to think is that it was built to worship the Dog Star, Sirius. As the Earth wobbles on its axis, and, you know, just the solar system moves around, stars come and go, at least from view in a certain geographical area. And at the latitude that Göbekli Tepe is at, Sirius would have been below the horizon until about 9300 BC. 9300 BCE works out to about 11,000 years ago. So their thinking now is that they built this temple in response to a very, very bright star. Sirius is one of the top few brightest objects in the sky. That they would have built that for when Sirius first arose and to start worship of that star.
Fuck, they're saying it's like actually the brightest star.
Yeah.
It's the fourth brightest past the moon, Venus, and Jupiter.
Yep.
Which, none of which are stars. So fucking A.
Yeah.
That would be in a very important object, I would think.
Definitely. Now, one thing that's interesting with this is the general consensus has been, with the Neolithic era, was that agriculture came first, and then that caused settlements to develop, and then civilization and art and religion. There is no evidence of agriculture near the temple, which would suggest that maybe religion came before any of that other stuff. Now, granted, there's also no reason that hunters and gatherers can't have settlements. That can definitely be observed in extant hunter-gatherer societies.
Or religions, for that matter.
And, yeah, religion can happen, too. So, yeah, it looks like religion's a bit older than was once thought.
Well, it makes a good system of control.
Well, what's funny with it is the original motives wasn't to control people. It was to try to control the forces of nature. And over time, when people started figuring out, oh, wait, we can't control the forces of nature, then, or even just out of convenience, they started just using it to control people. Which brings us to a judge in Nashville, Tennessee, who has decided, and this is a very interesting decision. This is child support magistrate Lou Ann Ballou, who had a simple child custody case brought before her, and she took a look at it, and it wasn't just a simple child support case, or child custody case. The child's father was wanting his last name to be his son's last name, whereas the mother had given the child her last name. And so the judge took a look at it, and rather than just making a decision on last names, changed everything. The baby's name was Messiah Deshaun Martin, and now it is Martin Deshaun McCullough. So to keep his mom's last name in there, the judge just used it for a first name. And what gets even worse is that the judge reasoning for doing this is her own religious beliefs.
The quote is, the word Messiah is a title, and it's a title that has only been earned by one person, and that one person is Jesus Christ. That's what the judge told WBIR-TV in an interview from her office, which, interestingly enough, had a ceramic figurine of Joseph, Mary, and the little baby Jesus on her desk. And the Ten Commandments hung on her wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No issues there either.
Yeah. Hedy Weinberg from the ACLU took issue with this, saying parents, not the government, have the right to name a child. The judge cannot impose her faith on those who come into her courtroom. And the boy's mother said on WBIR-TV, she chose the name because she liked the way it sounded and it went well with the names of her other sons, Micah and Mason. And she will be appealing the decision and will continue to call her son Messiah. And she told the station, I never intended on that, naming my son Messiah because it means God. And I didn't think a judge could make me change my baby's name because of her religious beliefs.
Well, you know, something they mentioned in this article is that we're starting to see a lot more different names or names that we're not used to now. And this is just kind of a side effect of that.
Yeah.
So we're going to see a lot of names that, you know, just seem a little odd, but, you know, whatever. Let's get over it. Get used to it.
Well, it's one of the biggest trends right now is babies being given titles as names. And Messiah is a case of a title. A title meaning savior. It's in 2012, it was ranked number 4th among the fastest growing baby names.
Wow.
Came in just ahead of King and a couple spots behind the number one spot, Major.
Really?
Now, one thing I see with the problem of giving titles for names, and I'm not going to say that courts should be making this decision for anybody, but I think it's just a really bad idea, is it could cause confusion. Say a young man is given the name Major Johnson and joins the military, joins the army, attains the rank of sergeant, and if somebody ended up using his first name, would be calling him Sergeant Major Johnson, but he's not a sergeant major, that could just get really fucking confusing.
I was more thinking about him as a... No, elementary school kid, because he's Major Johnson.
Okay, screw getting made fun of as a kid. Granted, I was bullied relentlessly, and I think parents shouldn't.
For Dustin?
I was the new kid.
Wow. The new kid. Okay.
I was the new kid, and then I was
sure,
just the kid that everybody bullied.
Thing.
No, it wasn't a name thing. But giving, but people did still try to use my name in ways to make fun of me.
Okay.
Let's just move beyond that.
okay.
Creating extra things that can get your kid bullied is cruel, because bullying is terribly cruel. But even just making it so that somebody's life ends up being more confusing or more difficult, don't do that to your kid. Have some compassion.
Yeah, I technically don't have a problem with it, but it just seems odd to me, but whatever. There's, you know, naming your kids after objects or brand names or titles, it whatevs, but it's still kind of odd, but I'll deal.
Don't do it! switching to a happier topic. New Zealand, back in April, voted to legalize same-sex marriage, making it the first country in that region to do that. And the first same-sex marriage to be performed in New Zealand was quite interesting. Lindley Bendall and Ali Wanakau were selected by Air New Zealand to get married on a flight from Queenstown to Auckland.
Cool.
And so they got married on a plane.
Hmm. Did they let them join the Mile High Club?
Now, okay, I don't know if they allowed that, but...
They should. Fuck, it's a plane.
They did make it an all-expenses-paid wedding, and they got to bring 90 guests and members of a radio station crew.
Okay, okay. Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Fucking A. Well, good on them.
So what's even more interesting there? You know, we've mostly just been focusing on this issue within the U.S., but... There are currently 14 countries that allow same-sex marriage. That includes the Netherlands, Belgium, Spain, Norway, Sweden, Iceland, Portugal, Denmark, France, Argentina, Uruguay, Canada, and South Africa. It's also legal in parts of Brazil, Mexico, and the U.S.
Mind is blown by Mexico and Brazil. To me.
Even more so, my mind is blown that Uruguay, Argentina, and South Africa beat the U.S.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I can actually kind of see that. Argentina, Uruguay, those are really small countries, comparatively. Mexico and Brazil, kind of like us, they have states within their country. So, I guess they're kind of going the same route we are, but you know, Argentina, Uruguay, yeah, that you just kind of have to take those whole cloth.
Argentina's not that small. It's pretty damn big.
All right, well, it's no Brazil.
It's still got dialing code 54.
What the fuck is that?
We're 01, they're 54. That wasn't what I was looking up.
Isn't there the only 54 reference, isn't there like a car 54, like a cop show?
They've still got a population of 41.6 million.
All right, all right.
Yeah, calling code plus 54. It's what Google showed up on the search page.
All right, fair enough. car 54. Yeah, car 54, where are you? American sitcom from 61 to 63.
Okay. Coming from the FFRF, there is that ongoing case that we've talked about already, with a lawsuit against the town of Greece, New York, and their almost exclusively Christian prayers. And that suit was brought up by two plaintiffs, a atheist and a Jew. And after the plaintiffs won in the Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court agreed to take the town's appeal.
Decided to hear that. Yeah, that's so bad.
And even worse, the town currently has Friends of the Court briefs on their behalf from the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is a religious right legal group. Groups from the Christian right in Congress, including 85 members of the House and 34 senators, and all but one representative and all but one senator are Republicans, 23 attorney generals, and now the Obama administration.
Motherfucker. What the fuck?
On the other side, you get Americans United, the FFRF.
Don't say it so down, man.
it's not it doesn't looking look good.
And this is probably going to set a really fucking bad case law precedent.
FFRF's big concern really appears to boil down to the current principle that's being used is from Sandra Day O'Connor's endorsement standard, which says that a government act violates the First Amendment if it appears to endorse religion. And now they're afraid that the much more conservative court that is in place now will change that.
Well, I swear I recall something about this saying that they haven't had a non-Christian prayer since something like 2009 or 2010.
Yeah, it was something.
So
like
it's
that.
Not like so it's not like they're not showing favoritism or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sucky.
This isn't gonna end well. All right. I think Kennedy is probably gonna be the swing vote on this, and I think he's gonna err on the side of religious freedom and let them do it.
Yeah. I think I'd have to agree with you on that one, as much as I hate to.
Yeah, this one's going to be shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
But at least we won't have to bring you bad news on that one till at least next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one thing about nice thing about the Supreme Court not working very much.
And slowly when they do.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
So if you got any friends that are senators, or if you yourself are a senator or a House of Rep, you know, you might want to just toss your hat in there and, you know, put a little letter in that amicus brief on our side of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My buddy on Capitol Hill, if you're listening, we're talking to you.
And if you do it, and then three of your friends do it, and three of their friends do it, and just saying.
Mm-hmm. Or more accurately, you get your boss to do it, and then get your friends to get their bosses to do it.
Oh.
Yeah.
We need more smart people in politics, people. Get out there.
Yeah.
Seriously.
All right.
Shit.
All right. Joining us now is Rebecca Witzman. And she's a survivor of the Oklahoma City tornado and was interviewed by Wolf Blitzer, where it took kind of an interesting turn. I'll go ahead and play that interview now.
Anders, he talks a lot, but he's pretty shy right now.
He's preoccupied. He just needs something to...
Yeah, I think he's happy, a happy little guy.
Yeah.
And you're a happy young lady.
I couldn't be happier.
You survived.
I saw the bathtub.
I mean, when you think about it, if you would have stayed in that house...
No, there's no way. Our bathtub was full of debris. Like, the place I would have been was just full of, like, 2x4s and everything else, you know. There's nothing. There's no way. And that's hard to think about.
Anders, I'm going to train you now to become an anchorman, okay?
He doesn't want to let go.
He's shrunk. You got to hold it like this. You put it in front of your mouth. And look at the camera over there, Anders.
Can you say hi?
Yeah, say, yes. I'm Anders, and this is Sienna. Can you say that?
Can you say, how old are you? No, he's not going to say anything. Can you say bye-bye? Bye-bye. No.
He's a shy little guy.
Not today.
Oh, he said it. Okay, good. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Shake hands.
Yeah, shake his hand. Can you high five?
Yeah. No.
No?
Okay.
Oh. All right, yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Such a sweet little guy.
Yeah.
Well, you're blessed. Yeah. Brian, your husband, is blessed. Anders is blessed.
Brian.
Yeah, Brian. You like Brian, huh? That's your dad. Well, we're happy you're here. You guys did a great job,
yeah.
And I guess you got to thank the Lord, right?
Yeah.
Do you thank the Lord for that split-second decision?
I'm actually an atheist.
Oh, you are. All right. Don't thank the Lord. But yeah, you made the right call.
Yeah, yeah. We are here, and you know, I don't blame anybody for thanking the Lord.
Of course not. So.
Oh, goodness.
I laugh when I hear that, too.
Yeah. Oh, man, your kid was so cute throughout that whole thing.
He is cute. He's always cute.
So what was it like going through the tornado?
Horrible. I mean, whenever we have tornadoes coming, we know that it's going to happen somewhere over a tri-state area sometime in the next, 48 hours. That's how well we know, which is not, I mean, that you don't really know. You just kind of have an idea. So you keep an eye on the weather. So I've been keeping an eye on the weather all day and, they kept pushing it back. They kept saying, oh, it's going to come at 6 p.m. Oh, it's going to come at 8 p.m. And so I was just like, oh, okay. 8 p.m. La, 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 la. Went about my day. Around 2 p.m., I tried to call my mother. And she was in school. I didn't realize that she wasn't out yet. It was May 20th. And so I kind of thought that she was already done. She's a teacher. And whenever she answered, she's just like, how's the weather? She knew it would be bad today, that day. And I said, oh, no, they keep pushing it back. Don't worry about it. Everything's fine. And then about 30 minutes later, I hear thunder outside. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I thought it wasn't supposed to happen till 8. What's going on? This is strange. And, I usually try to calm Anders when there's thunder by saying, boom, ha, 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 and laughing at it. I'm sitting there saying, boom, boom. And he's going to the window and looking at the lightning and saying, boom, ha, 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 and then I turn on the weather and it's coming. Like it's already, well, the storms are coming. They're starting early, almost 5 hours early. And so I started watching and there was a storm that was kind of, they were trying to keep their eye on. And then I knew that, it looked like hail was coming towards us at first. They're like, oh, there's a lot of hail with this one. And I was contacting friends on Facebook saying, oh, hey, I think it might hit your house. Are you guys safe? La, 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 la. Then it started forming the tornado. And then I immediately grabbed Anders. The sirens went off pretty fast after that. As soon as they have something that they think is a tornado, the sirens go off. So I grabbed him. I grabbed his mattress out of his crib and ran to my bathtub. And then as I was watching it, it started taking kind of a direct route directly to my house. And then they showed it on – whenever I saw it on the screen, it was lifting debris that looked like it was about the size of a car. And I just like, no, hell no. And I took off. But,
took off as in left your house?
Yeah, I got in the car. I didn't even buckle in Anders. I didn't wear shoes. I didn't do anything. I just grabbed, I was pissed that I had to grab my keys. Like I couldn't believe it. I had to find my keys. That was so annoying. Like the fact that I had to do one thing before getting out was, I had that moment of like, what if I can't find them? But I found them. And then the next concern was, they said there was hail. Am I going to get hit by a hailstone trying to get into my car and die this way? So I finally got out. And as soon as I got, into the car and the car was started, I knew I had lived. It was like, yes, I saved us. I even told my kid, like the whole time I tried to not panic him, even though I was panicking. So I'd be like, where's mommy's skis? Gonna find him. We gotta go. And then like once I was in the car, I was like, Anders, mommy just saved our lives. and trying to be positive. But I didn't even believe it. I didn't believe that it was even happening. Even whenever I was 2 miles away and watching it hit my house, I thought, is it in front of it? Is it behind it? I can't tell, really. It was so big that there was no way to tell if it was in front or behind. But now I know it's because it was in front, behind, and everything in between.
Wow.
Because, it was like a mile and a half wide. So, it hit the whole thing.
Holy crap. That's a huge tornado.
Yeah. It took out, it's like my entire neighborhood. Nothing is in my neighborhood. and we are in the direct center of the path. Unfortunately, it sucks. But yeah, so that was the story leading up to it. And then, when I went back, there was nothing there. I mean, it was all destroyed. Everything was in pieces everywhere.
Wow.
I mean, it was about knee level. My house was about knee level. So.
God damn. I just don't understand the appeal of living in Tornado Alley.
There's no appeal. I hate this place.
All right. I can't
wait to get out of here. I never intended on this becoming like a semi-permanent or long-term thing. It just, I kind of ended up here and then got stuck here. Well, I mean, I hate to say that because I ended up getting married to a man who is from Oklahoma, and then he's going to school, so we have to stick it out for him to finish school. So whenever I first was moving here, I thought, oh, I'll live there for like a month. Yeah. And it's been like 6 years and my house got hit by a fucking tornado. I'm sorry. Am I allowed to curse?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. That's encouraged.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, and you know, the odds are really against that generally. Yeah. I mean, this one hit, I guess, 13,000 homes. That's major. I mean, they haven't had that kind of damage. I don't know the last time they had that kind of, maybe 1999, something like that, a good 14 years. So it's not like every now and then, you know, everybody gets hit or anything like that. So
yeah, a normal tornado might knock out a couple of structures.
Well, a normal tornado will take off your shingles. I mean, like an F1 or an F2, it's going to take your shingles. It might accidentally kill somebody, but it's not going to just come and destroy everything. Those are more rare, and unfortunately, that's what hit my house. Yeah, but you know, I've always been afraid of tornadoes my entire life. I used to have nightmares, even as a small child, about tornadoes coming. And my brother, whenever he found out that I got hit and they didn't know that I was in it, because I had actually posted just before it hit, I had told everybody I was in my bathtub. And once it came time for me to leave, I didn't have any time to say, oh, I'm getting out of the bathtub now and I'm going to leave. Instead, I was just like, where are my keys? Ah, you know? Mm-hmm. So everybody thought I was in the bathtub. And so my brother was thinking, oh my gosh, she's either dead or she's fucked in the head for life. Because I had been having these nightmares of tornadoes since I was a little girl, and he knew that. Mm. So fortunately, very fortunately, neither one of those happened. I'm doing pretty well.
That is awesome. And so how did you end up getting interviewed by CNN?
Okay, well, whenever I first bought the house, starts there, in 2010, almost immediately after that, next May, there was a storm that had hail the size of softballs. I mean, they were in ginormous hailstones. And so I had taken pictures of a few of these that had hit my house, and I posted them on iReport. And I was just like, ooh, this is newsworthy. Yeah, iReport, cool. And so whenever this happened, a friend of mine had her cell phone and took pictures of my house. And I was like, oh, yeah, I should put those on iReport. So I uploaded them to iReport with three little sentences. It was like, hey, you know, I was in my bathtub until it was 5 miles away with my 18-month-old son, 19-month-old son. But then I panicked and drove away. This is what happened to my house. That's all I wrote. Mm-hmm. And then they emailed me saying, hey, we really like your story. It's compelling. You know, mother saves child. We'd really like to interview you. Is that okay? We'd like to interview tomorrow around 4 p.m. If you'll just drive up to the destroyed bowling alley. And I said, yeah, I can do that. And they told me, you know, we think it'll be an uplifting story amongst all this devastation. And I was like, I agree. I think that people need a happy story with a happy ending right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's how it happened. Actually, I ended up getting booked by two different producers for two different interviews that were going on, and on accident, because one booked me under my maiden name and one booked me under my married name. And then they kind of like had a battle of the producers, and then Wolf Blitzer won. So it almost didn't even happen.
Wow. And so watching the interview, he looked kind of flabbergasted when you've definitely seemed a little bit surprised by the question and hesitant in answering, and he definitely seemed flabbergasted. And so how did that really all play out?
Well, you know, the first question was, you got to thank the Lord, right? And I thought, well, that's a general question. Oh, yeah, the general you, like 80% of the population. I didn't really give, I just kind of looked down and was like, yeah, I guess. and then he's like, do you? And I was like, wow, that is direct. That is extremely direct. And then I knew what I was about to say, but I like hesitated because I was just like, oh man, he has no idea. He doesn't even know what's about to happen.
And I'd imagine Wolf Blitzer doesn't like to be surprised on camera.
I have no idea. I don't know. I'm sure that he usually isn't, because they have things scripted or they vet people or something. And all they knew about me was like, lady saves baby.
You did just shit into cereal.
Well, you couldn't even find that I was an atheist online if you tried. I mean, I have Mormon family members. My mom's Catholic. Nobody knew. I hid that stuff. And so,
So you outed yourself as an atheist on national television.
Right? I'm just not a liar.
Wow. Kudos.
I didn't know what else to say, you know? And also, it was such a direct question. And I was just like, okay, well, you know, there's a very direct answer for that direct question. But yeah, whenever I got back, so it took about 45 minutes to drive back to where I was staying at a friend's house. Because of the traffic from the tornado and everything. So I drove to my friend's house, and whenever I came in, he was like, so how was your Wolf Blitzer interview? You know, kind of like teasing. And I said, it went really well. But at the end, you know, he asked me if I thanked the Lord. And he's like, oh, man, what did you say? And I was like, I said I was an atheist. He was like, you said you were an atheist? And I was like, I am an atheist. I don't know. What was I supposed to say? He's like, oh, wow. And then I was like, give me your phone. I need to call Brian. So I call my husband, who's, you know, at the house working on it with his Mormon father. And I said, hey, Brian, the interview went really well, but I need to tell you something. And he's like, you know, he hates it when I say that. I always preemptively, right? I try to break it to him, like, say, there's something I need to tell you. Like, it's never good when your wife says that, never. And so I was just like, you know, everything went well. But at the end, he asked me to thank the Lord. And I said I was an atheist. He's like, oh, I told my grandparents to watch that. So, his Mormon grandparents who live in Utah were watching that live. Oh. Which is fine. I mean, it's fine. I don't think that it was really a shock to them, because, I mean, it's very clear that we don't practice. We don't go to church. We don't do any of that stuff, you know. It was probably a harder thing for my mom, because she's Spanish Catholic. And yeah. So she had a hard time with it until the Pope came out like the next day and was like, hey, these are fine. and then, of course, the Vatican right after that was like, shh, don't listen to the Pope. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But yeah, she sent me the article from the Pope, and that made her feel better, so that was good.
So there really wasn't any backlash from either of your families then?
My mom was upset for about a day, and then I told her, you know, I'm sorry. She kind of, at one point, she said, it's not even true, though, because you believe in a higher power. And I was like, Mom, I wouldn't have said it if it wasn't true. You know, I mean, I'm not going to just be like, oh, yeah, now I believe in Buddha, so I'm an atheist. I mean, like, that wouldn't make any sense. And so, you know, so she was upset, but no, everybody else was perfectly fine. Actually, a lot of people were really supportive. I was surprised by, there was one person I was really worried about, because we have a cool relationship. You know, he's a Tea Party activist, but he lets me get away with telling him he's wrong. And, you know, it's one of my husband's uncles. I really love the guy. He's really cool. And so I thought, oh man, what's he going to say? I was really worried. And he sent me this, sorry, that was my kid. He sent me this message that's just like, good for you for, you know, we don't always agree, but it's awesome that you'll stand up for what you believe, no matter what anybody thinks. You should keep doing that. That's awesome. And I was like, wow. Hey, just unexpected support. That was pretty, pretty amazing.
Very nice.
Yeah, and actually, I know that on Tea Party activist websites, there's been some crazy stuff, like really crazy stuff written. You know, at one point, I read somebody said like that Anders should have died to teach me a lesson. I was like, wow, you're really good at being a Christian. Yeah, like a Christian said that. Somebody who thinks they're a Christian said that. And so, no, I didn't read any of that. After that, I just stopped reading. I was like, okay, these people are totally insane. So I didn't read that stuff, but anybody who's contacted me personally has been extremely supportive, like from both sides of the fence.
That's awesome to hear.
Yeah.
There are some really big assholes out there.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I was upset for about 10 seconds before I was just like, oh, wait, no, they're totally crazy. Oh, okay. And then I was okay again. Like, it was upsetting to me whenever I first read it. And then I came to the conclusion that the person was completely insane. Unfortunately, they're not being treated. Probably not for their insanity. But yeah, It is what it is, I guess.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that happens.
Yeah. I have some friends who, I guess, had read some of the stuff written on those Tea Party sites, and they were upset, and they're like, are you reading any of the things? And I said, no. And they said, oh, good. And that's all I needed to hear to know that I was making the right decision on not reading it. I was just like, oh, okay, yeah, I have, nah. I mean, a tornado just hit my house. I didn't need anything else. especially from strangers. I really don't care what strangers have to say.
Yeah.
So, Rebecca, now that you've, you know, kind of come through the other side of the storm, literally, and through a few different ones, really, what's going on with your life? What have you been trying to work on?
I have several things that I'm working on, you know, other than trying to put my life back together and move to the Seattle area. Let me start by telling you what happened immediately after the storm, because that'll help. Okay. So after the storm, you know, whenever it came time to clean up, suddenly we were kind of at the mercy of volunteers. There were thousands of volunteers showing up and going to, you know, being sent to all these houses and everything. And so we had a bunch of people show up. They were a church group. I think it was Church of Christ. But anyway, they showed up to shovel our house out. And so, you know, it was really interesting because I started talking to them and they were from all over the country. Like, some were from Memphis, some were from Nashville, some were from Virginia. They were from everywhere. But they were all like in my house, one like cohesive group wearing the same t-shirt. And I was like, how did this happen? Like, how did you show up at my house wearing the same shirts? Like, what was this? And they said, you know, we just said, we were able to go, and they put us in touch with the local church here, and then we showed up, and then, you know, they had some shirts, and, you know, and then they sent us out. And I thought, oh, okay. You know, and so, well, whenever I started thinking, you know, why not? We don't really have that. Do we have that? And I started looking, and we don't really have something like that set up. And so, Dale McGowan, he's the Foundation Beyond Belief, founder, and, you know, he wrote Raising Freethinkers and Parenting Beyond Belief. Anyway, he was in town. I ended up talking to him, and I told him, hey, I know that you did Foundation Beyond Belief. I have these really interesting ideas on how to, you know, expand or work on your Volunteering Beyond Belief program. And I shared some ideas with him, and he's like, I really like these. I want you to talk to Noelle and Brittany. And so he put me in touch with them. And they really like the ideas too. So I'll go ahead and share some of those ideas right now.
Very nice.
First of all, the idea, they actually were already working on something similar to that idea that I had before. They have something coming out called Humanist First Responders, in which you, and originally they were going to set it up so that groups could sign up. But I said, you know, why don't you just do it so that individuals can sign up? Because individuals could say, hey, I'm interested in being contacted whenever there's a crisis to go out and help in certain areas. And then they can just send you a mass email out that says, hey, there's this thing, or, you know, we're looking for who can be amassed for volunteerism for this. And then people can say, oh, I'm available or not available, or I have these types of skills, or I don't, you know, like I'm a doctor, or I have machinery, you know, things like that. And yeah. So I said that they should do an individual thing. And then, oh, okay. And then after that, I had some ideas on what the responders should do, because I have a unique perspective of being on the other side, and things were really not done well. I mean, they were done awesomely. I was really appreciative to have all these people who were there working. I mean, they had sunburns. They were dripping with sweat. They worked for hours and hours and hours for nothing. I mean, they just did it to help. And that was amazing. But the problem was, it seemed like it was more about the volunteers than it was about the victim. And I feel like that's a problem. Because whenever they were shoveling out my house, they were like, oh, let's shovel all this crap. we got to take this crap over to the curb. And it's just like, for me, it's not my crap. Mm-hmm. It's my entire life. It's like, yeah, my grandmother gave me that, and that's important to me. You know, like, and little things, things that you wouldn't expect to be important are important to somebody. You know, like, stupid things.
Like, I'm sure there's a decent amount of stuff that was recoverable.
Yeah.
Honestly, I didn't want to recover too much because it was all contaminated with like asbestos and mercury and lead. So, I mean, you know, whenever houses are destroyed, we had CFL bulbs and, you know, those were all destroyed and that mercury gets on everything. And, you know, you just don't know what's safe and what's not. And I have a kid. So a lot of it actually wasn't, but it would have been good to be able to go through and save like paperwork, birth certificates, things like that. Those things are important. And a lot of that got shoveled out. And so it would have been nice if they would have just taken, you know, if it wasn't insulation and it wasn't shingles and it wasn't like drywall or bricks, then they just put it in a pile. Just take all the stuff that's stuff and put it in a pile and let me go through it. Don't go through my stuff. Just stick it in a pile because you don't know what's important. And I'm the only one who does. And then a few other things, like whenever it comes to beliefs, I feel like you should pay more attention to the victim's beliefs. Or non-beliefs, in my case. But even if it was humanists who were going out, if that person is a Catholic, I feel like they're the ones going through the crisis. And it shouldn't be about what you think. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's your turn to proselytize or try to convert them or tell them, you know, like, oh, you really need to speak to Jesus because, you know, blah, 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 blah. Or, hey, you know, where was your God now? You know, or something like that. I just don't feel like I don't feel like it's fair to pray with an E upon a victim when they're weak. Like, I just think that's wrong. I think that whatever the victim's beliefs are should be respected whenever they're going through their crisis. Mm-hmm. Another thing that they were doing was they kept giving me food, but nobody would make me stop to eat it. And it kept getting to be 6 p.m. and I was ready to pass out. Because I'd been working all day, because obviously there's no time to like stop. There's the work's never done. And so I kept just working and working and working. People would have food and I'd be like, oh yeah, I'll eat that in a bit. But it would have been nice to have somebody to just say, stop what you're doing. Come sit down with me. We're going to eat now. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like making sure that the victims actually having their needs met is really important, because I'm not the only one who wouldn't do it. You know, you're not thinking that way. You're just,
I remember when you came out here, we talked for a little bit. I think the word that was getting tossed around was advocate, to have somebody talk for you.
Yes. Yeah. That's the idea. The idea that I had was that you'd have a victim's advocate, who would go out and talk for you, you know, if you have something going wrong. Like we said to a couple of times, hey, everybody, if you could just take our stuff, put it in a pile, we really appreciate it. But people weren't listening and they weren't doing that. You can only say it once or twice before you're just like, oh, I don't want to be an asshole. And so I had the idea that you have a victim's advocate. And Sam Mulvey actually had a good idea where he said that you could have like somebody be in charge of a couple of houses. And so you would just go, if you had an issue that was going on, you just go to your victim's advocate and say, hey, you know, this is something, you know, and have that person there to speak for you, or, you know, and they could also be in charge of like saying, okay, everybody, we're going to take this break. We're all going to sit down. We're all going to eat lunch. That'd be amazing. I mean, that'd be beyond amazing. And so they love this idea. They really like the idea of having somebody there who's there on the victim side, and that you can go and speak to and have them speak on your behalf and tell everybody, hey, that right now you're in an atheist home. Please respect that. Please be mindful of it. This is their home. This is their tragedy. And please be respectful of them, you know, or the other way around. Say, you know, this is a Buddhist home. You know, they have these ideas. They really want you to respect them. Please be mindful of that, you know, whatever it is.
Just seems so such a basic idea.
It is. Yeah. It is, but it doesn't happen. Yeah. And so I mean, yeah, exactly. It's such a simple thing. It would actually be pretty easy, I think, in the end to get this implemented. You know, they already have people going out and just have, hey, here's a list of tasks and you're in charge of blank many houses. The end. And then, okay, so they actually had a program already set up called Helping Hands. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but in which if somebody's in great need, then they can request to be helped, but it's not a monetary kind of aid. It's for actual things like food or stuff, you know, things like that. You can go and request that. And so the idea is that we had was to couple these two together. What I told them was what we had were a bunch of people going down the streets, and they'd hand out these totes. They'd be like, hey, is this your home? Okay, here's a tote. And inside of the tote was food. There was toothpaste and toothbrushes and hairbrushes and nail clippers and, you know, everything that you could possibly need immediately. Even flip-flops. They had flip-flops in there, you know, inside of this tote. And then they would – and water bottles and a flashlight. So they would hand out a tote and they'd be like, here you go. And then they move on. And so that's a very interesting thing that Helping Hands would be perfect at. And so the idea would be that you could have people in lots of different cities do this, you know, like say, hey, everybody in the Milwaukee area, we're going to be making these toiletry bags and, you know, make the toiletry bags and then send those. And so it's something that people can actually be a part of outside of the area and be able to send that, you know, to the local thing. The idea would be similarly to how the churches are run. Foundation Beyond Belief would have these humanist first responders or Helping Hands send all of their aid to whatever local atheist groups they had in that area, or humanist groups or free thought, whatever it is. Because most areas have them now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if they're small, they have these groups set up throughout the country. Coupled with Helping Hands, though, I had another idea that they're moving on, which is awesome, and I'm really excited about it, which is called the Rainbow Lion Initiative or Rainbow Lion Project. We haven't solidified if it's an initiative or a project yet. I think we're leaning towards initiative right now because we're going to put it under the umbrella of Helping Hands. But the idea is what ended up happening with Anders was he had a very beloved stuffed animal that we called Rainbow Lion and had a rainbow mane that he was obsessed with. He slept with it. He nursed with it. He had it everywhere he went. We couldn't leave the house without Rainbow Lion. Rainbow Lion was extremely important. And so whenever the house was destroyed, Rainbow Lion was gone and we couldn't find another one. And so he was in shambles, really. I mean, he was crying nonstop. He'd wake up every hour crying for Rainbow Lion. He would scream my name, even though I was holding him. I was like holding him and rocking him, and he'd be like, mommy, 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 you know, and I couldn't do anything to calm him at all. It was horrible, honestly. Like, it was horrible.
Wow.
Friends of mine, though, took to Reddit to try to find one because they no longer made them. They had stopped making them 2 years before, and it was really, really, really disgusting, awful-looking, terrifying-looking stuffed animal. It's got, like, crazy-looking eyes. Like, it's the thing nightmares are made of. My kid's obsessed with it, so it's, like, part of our lives now. But, yeah, so it was impossible to find one, but Reddit tracked down some lady who was just, she had a few and she had ripped them up and stuffed them with weird smelling things. But they sent two of them. And as soon as we opened the box, it's like all of his cares melt away. Everything was fine. He just accepted life again. It was just like he was at home. He was perfectly fine. Because he had Rainbow Lion again. And so my idea was that every kid must have this like thing. You know, this thing that just kind of makes their world go around. And whenever they have it, they're like, okay, I feel okay. And so the idea is that we can have these advocates whenever they go to a home. If there's any children, they can specifically say, does the child have any toys that are special? And find out what the toy is, try to get a picture or a description, anything that they can, and then put this information online and let people take care of this. Like let either the advocate, you know, if they can buy it at the store, that'd be easy for the advocate to run out and get this thing using the funds from Helping Hands. Or they, if they need help finding it, then come and put it online and then let people from around the world, you know, get on top of it and get that, find that toy, get that toy and get that kid, you know,
little piece of normality.
And the people that don't have the availability to actually travel to help might have the time at home to be able to take care of that.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. It gives them something to do. I mean, a lot of people feel really helpless. They're just watching and they're just like, oh my gosh, you know, and so I think that it's a really good cause. You know, it brings the child back to security. Like it's a security object. That's what they're for. And so whenever the child has lost all their everything, and their sense of security and their sense of home, to bring that back, it was tremendous. I mean, like, I can't even begin to describe how amazing it felt whenever we opened that box. Cause I couldn't help my own child. That was horrible. Like I couldn't end his suffering without, before we opened that box. Yeah, it was horrible. And so, yeah, I hope to use what happened to me to help other families.
Mm-hmm. Cause yeah, there's always disasters.
Yeah. I mean, if it's not another tornado, there's going to be fires, there's going to be floods, other types of wind storms. I mean, there's all kinds of things, that happen, and it's going to happen again, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Fires are the one that are definitely on my mind. There's fires everywhere around here.
Oh yeah. Lovely. Oh
yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Drove through some of the fire damage yesterday from a recent one. Even saw a torched building and vehicle, and they're just spotted a new one today. Looks like it's not more than 20 miles out of town. And hopefully the wind keeps blowing east. Fortunately, that fire is to the east, and the wind's usually, you know, west to east. But man, yeah.
Yeah, no, well, those are the projects that I'm working on that have to do with things from the tornado. I have some other things that I'm working on as well. I have, right now, the Secular Party of America is about to put on a contest to have my little quote, you know, that I'm actually an atheist, designed so that I can start a blog. I had a blog idea that I'm going to be working on. It's kind of the idea is that people in the atheist community can submit stories, like little quips, like little ideas from their life, you know, just these weird moments that we all kind of have when we're atheists. Like, for instance, there's one of mine where I walked in. I was at work one day, and I walked into the lunchroom, and I sat down and ate my lunch, and I realized the topic of conversation is that atheists are actually Satanists.
Oh. Yeah.
And then right after that, they asked me what church I went to. And so I'll save that for the story. But, you know, like just these weird little funny moments, or sometimes scary moments, or horrible moments. I mean, there are a lot of different things that happen to us just because we're atheists, and you know, they're stories that other people just don't have. And so the idea is that people will submit their stories. A lot of people already have. They're sending them in to I'm actually an atheist@gmail.com. And so a lot of people are also submitting their stories on, you know, like kind of their journey to atheism and how they got there and what happened along the way. And those are appreciated as well. Yeah. So
cool.
Nice.
Another fun little thing. That one's just for fun. That one just makes me happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really cool project.
The rest are just kind of like humanist. Not that that's not a like, oh, they're just humanist projects. But no, yeah, the rest are related to giving back and things like that, where this is just like, this is fun. This will be fun to read. I want to read people's stories too.
Oh, that's awesome.
So how were you raised anyways? did you have any like interesting church stories growing up, or?
You know, I went to church, but I mean, I spent most of my time staring at the lights, trying to figure out which one Jesus lived in. Like he obviously lived in whatever light was brightest in the entire church room. So I was just like staring with my mouth open at the lights for like an hour. So not much was happening in there. You know, I was raised that way, but I feel like the way in which I was raised helped me to think for myself, because we moved a lot. I moved 15 times by the time I was in 10th grade. And so I was perpetually the new kid. And so every single place I moved, though, there was always a different idea of what was cool. like if you go one place, it's just like, oh, you need to have striped socks or you're not cool. Like, or you go to the next place and they're like, oh, man, you're not wearing blank, so you're not cool or whatever. There was this very, very arbitrary list of what was cool and what was not cool. And eventually I was just like, you know what? Meh. You guys are all just full of crap. I'm going to do whatever I think is cool. And I'm not going to live here long enough for any of you to matter anyway. So, you know. So I always kind of just like very from a pretty young age, maybe second or third grade, I was just like walking to the beat of my own drum. Like, and I met a lot of cool people along the way because of that. Because usually I kind of became friends with the kind of social outcasts or the people who just weren't accepted for whatever reason. I mean, sometimes it was like because they were the bigger kid or they were the smarter kid. I mean, you know, whatever reason it was. But because of that, I feel like I had a lot of freedom to think about what I thought instead of being like, what does everybody think? What does everybody think? I need to make sure that I think what everybody thinks. And I feel like a lot of times that will keep you bound to certain ideas that are just false. And I didn't feel bound in that way. So around 14, that's whenever I started kind of listening in church. I was like, huh, this is weird. You know, and there's this one thing that they said in church. They said, in the Nicene Creed, they'd say, we believe in one holy Catholic and apostolic church. And I thought, I don't know why I'm saying that. I don't believe that. So I stopped saying that. Like, I stopped saying that line. I was just like, I'm not going to say that line because I don't think if you're a Baptist, you're going to go to hell. That doesn't make any sense. And I don't think if you're a Methodist, you're going to go to hell. So why would I believe in only one holy Catholic and apostolic church? Okay, well, no. And then after that, it just followed like more and more lines were getting cut out. And eventually I was like really paying attention. I was like, man, what the heck am I listening to? What is this? You know, it's like I had suddenly woken up and I had been going to church all my life. And so it wasn't until I was about 19 that I was like, you know what? I don't know anything. I am, you know, I claim to have all these beliefs, but I don't know any about any of it. I need to study this. And so I changed my major to humanities so that I could study comparative religions. And I did that and came out an atheist on the other side. And so, yeah. So I was technically raised Catholic. I was raised Catholic, but that just meant, you know, I went and sat in church with my mouth open for like 14 years. Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very nice.
How far did you make it into comparative religions?
Comparative religions. I majored in that. I graduated.
You actually did.
Right. Well, I studied humanities. And then I did my thesis on collectivism and individualism and comparing the two. Collectivism being things like religion and in-groups and stuff like that, and individualism kind of walking to the beat of your own drum. And how our society is going more and more towards individualism.
Ah, okay. Sweet. Cool.
Yeah. So it was fun. I wrote a lot of interesting papers. I'm laughing because there was a time or two where it was required that you present your paper to the class. And mine was definitely not what other people were doing.
It wasn't received as well, perhaps?
No, it was received just fine. They just kind of all had their mouths open. Because, you know, like there was one whenever we were supposed to do, it was a small paper. It was like a 6-page paper, very small, maybe 6 to 10, something like that, about we were supposed to study a religion and its culture and its customs and then like present that to the class. And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to study atheism. And so, you know, I ended up going, going over why, because you're an atheist, you don't just kill people. Like, and so, yeah, one of the paragraphs started, so why not kill people? Like, and I remember that had a weird reaction. And but then I went over, you know, the, you know, human reasoning would lead you to not kill people. I mean, it's completely ridiculous to think that, oh, you know what? I don't believe in God. Now I'm just going to kill everybody. Like, that doesn't follow. That's not reasonable at all. Okay. So.
Yeah.
So it was a fun paper. I did really well. My teacher was really supportive, even though he wasn't an atheist. He didn't mind that I took that route. It was pretty fun, though.
Alrighty.
Actually sounds kind of cool.
Rebecca, thank you very much for joining us on Atheist Nomads, and I'm very glad to hear that you and your family are doing well in the aftermath of, well, a horrible disaster.
A horrible shitstorm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by all means, please let us know how things are going. Keep us in the loop on that.
I have a feeling that things are, at least within the next year, going to wrap up as far as the tragedy is concerned, and then things will be pretty good. I have a feeling that things are going to be pretty good.
Now just get the fuck out of that area.
I know. I'm trying really hard. All right. Well, thank you.
It's been great talking with you again.
Yeah, you too. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find us online at www.atheistnomads.com. Contact us at contact@atheistnomads.com or leave us a voicemail message at 541-203-0666. You can also like us on Facebook or leave us a review on iTunes, Zune, or wherever else you find the podcast. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads. You usually say something whenever his name's mentioned. I was giving you a break for that.
Oh. You go, boy. Yeah, boy.